The following AA talk was recorded at the weekly Never Had a Legal Drink group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The opinions of the speaker do not necessarily represent those of the group or AA as a whole. Rather, this story represents one person's experience. If you have a desire to stop drinking and would like help, contact Alcoholics Anonymous at www.aa.org, or you can find AA listed in your local telephone book. AA's Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Ryan Alcoholic. I want to thank Rob for asking me to speak. It's an honor and a privilege to speak here, especially after I was asked to do service here. And I also find it an honor and a privilege to be able to be your chair for the last few weeks. And I thank you for that. And I've felt incredibly warm since I've come to this group, since I moved to New York. But so I guess what I'm going to do is do the standard, what it was like, what happened, and what I'm like now, and share in a general way of how that all happened. And I'm also going to share some things that don't necessarily contribute to my alcoholism, but when I got here, hearing stories like that helped me relate and helped me pay attention. But first, I want to, while everyone's still paying attention, I just want to say if you're new and you're suffering, we're glad you're here, and I hope that you're suffering a lot and that you're in a lot of pain. It's been my experience, the only people that make it, hang around, and get to turn their lives around are the guys that are in enough pain to do what it takes to stay here. And so there's a solution. Anyway, so I grew up in California in a little town right outside of, 10 miles outside of San Francisco. And that area was really, affluent and wealthy and white. And I look kind of white, but I'm a Chinese kid. And I'm very ethnic. And I felt very outside. And I wasn't brought up with a wealthy family. So I always felt, I didn't feel a part of. And that's, whatever your background is, I've heard a lot of people come tell different stories, but it's always a lot of times. Some people feel like perfectly fine. But my story was I felt really uncomfortable my whole life, you know. As soon as I can remember having cognitive thoughts, I was like I didn't ever want anybody coming over to my house and seeing my crazy chaotic family or my house was just nutty. And everyone else had these big giant castles they lived in with there was an Xbox back in the day, but PlayStations and Nintendo, Atari, not that old. Anyway, yeah. So I just felt uncomfortable. You know, I go to class. I remember feeling so uncomfortable that there was this chick in. I don't know. Some people don't like girls when they're in second grade, but I was into girls when I was in second grade. And I remember some dude, this chick that I liked him. So I started copying the way he ran. And that was pretty, and it was like, he could see this weird stutter step thing, so I was like, that guy must be pretty cool. So I started doing that thing, chasing around the schoolyard, trying to run like him, trying to learn him, and it was totally, totally odd and uncomfortable. But that was just how I did. I felt so uncomfortable in my own skin that I tried to be whoever anybody else wanted me to be, or who I thought I should be. And I also felt so uncomfortable with my family. I shared this in another meeting, but I felt like, I was pretty sure that I was adopted. And although my brother looks exactly like me, I was positive that I did not belong in this family. And I argued with my mom for years. I'd be like, yeah, I'm old enough, you can tell me now. It's okay, I can handle it. And then one day she showed me my birth certificate, so she won that one. But she won very few arguments with me, but that was one of them she got. And when I was young, when I was in third grade, my parents separated, and it was a real gnarly divorce, and me and my brother had to do the messenger thing back and forth, and it was really uncomfortable. But and there was also, I'm going to say again, none of this really has anything that contributed to my alcoholism. I kind of feel like I was born an alcoholic, but you got to drink to be an alcoholic, but if like behavior is any indication, I was sick from an early age, you know. There was physical abuse and sexual abuse, and it was really uncomfortable. And I was also pretty sure I was the only person whose parents had ever been divorced, and whoever didn't like to be short, because I'm a short guy, and I always wanted to be 5'10", 5'11", and I would pray before class every day, hopefully I'll be 2 or 3 inches taller in a couple hours. And that's my mom's real super spiritual, and she's in the program now too. She just got a year and on her 12-step. But I remember my conception of God at a young age was, my mom was all about there's some spirit out there, it's just loving and tolerant, and I was into that. But when I would get to class and not be 2 inches taller, I started to not believe in God anymore. And I didn't understand why my home life was the way it was and other people's were different. And so my conception of God or any kind of higher power was kind of like I thought of Santa Claus. I wanted a fire engine for Christmas or a bike or something. And then Christmas would come and I would get socks and a sweater. And then that happens enough years and then I just stopped believing in Santa Claus. And if I'm not 5'10 by 8 o'clock in the morning, I kind of stopped believing in God. And then so my divorce, the divorce came in and that was real heavy and I got super depressed. And so I feel like alcohol saved my life long before it started taking me down. Because I was messed up way before I took my first drink. I was super depressed and just not feeling all right. And then one day my friend came back from Germany and he discovered beer there. And the way he talked about it sounded like he was just on the beach or whatever and found buried treasure or something. And so he's like, yeah, let's drink. So I'm like, okay, whatever. And I'd had plenty of sips and everything. My mom's family's Irish Catholic, so they're all drunks. And then my dad's side of the family's, they're Chinese, and they can't drink. Their faces turn, I don't know if you ever drank with a Chinese guy, but their faces turn, my face included, turns bright red. Is race, talking about race, but tradition, drinking traditions? I don't know. Anyway. So they can't, my dad's side of the family doesn't really drink, but they do a lot of drugs, they're all drug addicts. So I was I feel like I've been genetically engineered to be this machine that just takes in drugs and alcohol and then ends up in Alcoholics Anonymous. So he comes back from Germany and he's like, let's drink. So I'm like, okay. Because that's what I see my family do, so I didn't see anything wrong with it or anything. So he stole a couple beers from his dad's house, and I was with three dudes. And I think it's important to say this, because I hear a lot of people talk about their first drink was a result of peer pressure. And if that's your story, that's your story. That's fine. But mine was, I was with two other guys, and one of them didn't drink. And so if I had chosen not to take that beer, I would have been in the majority. But that's not how I'm wired. I just saw it, and I was like, why not? So me and him pound this beer, nothing, absolutely nothing happens, and I don't think about it again. And then next weekend, he's like, well, let's drink another beer or whatever. And then I got all buzzed, and I was like, this is awesome. I want to get drunk now. That should be twice as awesome. And so then, the next weekend rolls around, and he comes back with we stole, a screwdriver, which is, screwdrivers are watered down or whatever, but we chased it with a cherry Pepsi that I'd stolen from 7-Eleven, and that was disgusting. But the night was glorious. We snuck out of my dad's apartment, and we pounded this drink and then chased it with... I stopped chasing it with the Pepsi because he told me I looked like a girl, so I was bummed out. So I had to, keep up my rep, and I pounded the rest of the drink, and we're on the middle of a staircase. And from that night on, I've never again drank on the middle of a staircase because I stood up and tumbled over. And but the night, it was I told the guy I loved him. He was my best friend. I was like, I love you, man. He was like, and then he pushed me off a bus stop. And it was glorious. It was I had found the secret, you know, because I hear a lot of people talk, and I relate. Hey, what's up, Barry? And I relate. Barry's late. To feeling like I grew up without a, everyone around me had the trick. They had the secret to like how to live life, and I felt like I was born without that kind of guidelines or whatever. And that night, it was me and my boy, and we were having a great time. And I fell off the top bunk in my bunk bed and hurt my knee a little bit, but everything was fine. I mean, like I didn't wake up with a hangover. I didn't throw up that night. Everything was good. And like that, I was a guy that threw up a lot. So every other night I pretty much threw up, but that night was perfect. And I woke up the next morning, and I remembered exactly how I felt. And I don't know if I've heard other people say, like, I don't remember the first time I ate ice cream or had a pizza, but I remember my first drink. I remember my first drunk. And maybe that's what separates me from other people. But I didn't have a slow progression into alcoholism. Like I had that first drunk, and then I was absolutely consumed by that. I just hit the ground running. Like everything I wanted to do had to be about getting drunk, because that was the first time I'd ever. I didn't know how uncomfortable I felt until I got drunk that first time. Because then I was fine. I was one among many, even though it was one dude. And I felt fine. I was happy, and I was just comfortable with myself and like the guy around me. So, and that's all I ever wanted. You know, that's all I didn't like want to be a bad guy or anything like that, or like steal things. I just wanted to feel okay with myself, and that led to like becoming a little criminal and scumbag or whatever. So that first drink happens, the first drunk happens, and I start. I don't know how long it took me, but I feel like I immediately started stealing. Because I remember we tried to let, he had an older brother, my buddy, he had an older brother, and we tried to get him to, he had a friend with a fake ID, so we were going back and forth trying to get them to buy us alcohol. But that just took too long and really frustrated me. So I started trying to shoulder tap outside of liquor stores. And I shoulder tapped an undercover cop one time, and that was uncomfortable. So... So I just started, stealing was easy for me, and it turns out I have a particular knack for it. So before school every day, there's a Safeway right next to my school, so I would go to the Safeway, I'd wake up early, take the bus to school, walk over to Safeway, and I'd steal like a couple beers or something like that, some gum so my breath didn't smell funky, and like a... They have like in the morning they have these really nice croissants, all gooey and chocolatey. So I take that too, and that was my breakfast, and that was I like that, and then I would go to school or whatever, and then come back at lunch and do pretty much the same thing, and then after school I would go way out of my way to this other little strip mall, and I would go through every store there was, every like Rite Aid or Long's or something like that, and just. And steal as I would fill my backpack with as much alcohol as I could, because I wanted to be prepared that when the weekend come, I would be getting trashed. And I know like there was a couple times where I didn't end up drunk, and I was really irritated by that. So I wanted to make sure that never would ever happen again. So I always had my closet just stuffed full of like really expensive alcohol too, because I thought it was interesting to steal as much expensive stuff as I could. And then going back and making amends, if I knew that, I would have just stolen like the $2 gallons of vodka. But so I'm drinking like top-notch stuff. I'm like 14 years old getting trashed off like Belvedere and Grey Goose and making martinis. And that was fine. That was awesome. Because then I got this reputation of being a good thief, and I enjoyed that reputation. I know my dad left Chicago because he was getting wrapped up in all kinds of drugs and PCP and all that kind of stuff. So I was like, that sounds really cool to me. So I wanted to be like this badass kind of gangster kid. Plus, because I was short and I was always getting picked on, so I'm like, I'm going to be really hardcore and people are going to fear me. I'm not that scary anymore, but I used to be a scary guy, and so I was this little like, I don't know, I had a chip on my shoulder, and I was stealing all this alcohol because it was really cool for me to do that, and I would be selling it to upperclassmen, and I was just the man, and I enjoyed that reputation, and the more I tried to like create that reputation, the more I ended up becoming that kind of guy. Because at first it was just like a front, and then it ended up being who I was. Like the person that I thought I was, this is towards the end, I guess I'm going out of order now, but the person that I thought I was, that I was raised by like my mother, who had good, she had good morals, she was always talking about God and trying myself with light and all kinds of hippie stuff, and I knew that's who my mother raised me to be, but that wasn't who I was anymore. And I had turned into a dude that I robbed everyone I ever knew. I had gotten kicked out of every house I'd ever lived in or been to. I was getting on and off probation. I was getting arrested all the time. And if a couple, if a couple weeks or if a month went by without getting arrested, my mother thought I'd been lying to her, like something, I must have ran or something like that. Or, I mean, it was just, it wasn't all awesome. And like, but for a while there, because I almost immediately have the, like, drinking and then consequences in drinking, and it was still fun. I almost immediately have consequences for, like, from the beginning. I was just on and off probation, get in and out of handcuffs. I stopped going to school because that wasn't really a priority, except to, like, meet with people to go get loaded. And that's what, that was kind of convenient. And then it just got, like, people stopped wanting to hang out with me because some people, like, want to go to class and learn things. And I didn't understand the dudes that I was getting loaded with who would get good grades. I didn't understand how you could like function at all on like a basic level without like outside of getting loaded. Like I got really good at getting drunk, but like reading a book was incredibly difficult. And so it basically ended up for me, like, I was just alone. I was alone a lot of times. I had maybe like one or two guys that would ride with me, but I was just alone. And I preferred that because I didn't have to share any drugs. I didn't have to share any alcohol with anybody. And I was also getting really paranoid. I was carrying like around a knife. But I've never like done anything mean. I've been in a couple fights, but I've never like stabbed anybody or anything. But I was like, I'm going to carry a gun. I'm going to buy a gun. And I'm going to kill somebody or something. Like, just some crazy. And I was also really, like, really kind of losing it towards the end. Like, I would pick up payphones and be like, I'm going to kill the president. And then just walk away. And expect. I thought like white vans were following me. So I was pretty sure the FBI was on to me and my like my thieving ways. And so I would pick up payphones and expect like within seconds, just like white vans everywhere. Which there were never any, so I wasn't like a top priority on anybody's list. But I was getting like real kind of like freak, like I was just scary. And it got to a point where, because I was getting loaded every day, I started getting loaded immediately, almost immediately. And I just couldn't function on any kind of level if I wasn't getting loaded. I would make these, like, after a while, you know, I'd be waking up in the morning and be like, I'd have one of two thoughts. I'd either go, like, I would wake up and I'd say, I don't want to get loaded today. In which case, I would like, beg. I'd be like, I don't want to live like this anymore. I'm like, my mother's crying all the time. I'm always, like, getting arrested. I can't handle this anymore. I'm just going to go to class and whatever. But then, like, by noon, I remember countless times I'd be in the middle of drinking and then remember that I wasn't going to get loaded that day. And I couldn't explain to myself. There was no rationalization for why that would occur. And I would get home at the end of the night and be like, and if I had sobered up by then, I would be like, oh, I didn't get loaded today. And then I would remember that at some point, like I did, and I thought I was like really losing my mind. And then I come here and the doctor's opinion tells me that's exactly so. But it didn't make any sense to me at the time why, if I wanted to, no matter how great the need or want, I couldn't make it happen. Or I would wake up and I'd say I need to get loaded as fast as possible, and I wouldn't care if I had to go through my mother's purse, or if I had to rob a friend, or if I had to go into my dad's house and steal his stash or whatever. And so I just became like a scummy dude. And I was never like brought up to be a scummy dude. I was always like, my mother's a good person, and I don't know. But that's just who I was. That's what alcohol wanted, like, I needed to be to get my drink, you know. And it's because that first drunk was just so eye-opening and so amazing that it was so comforting that I was willing to do anything to have that come back. And after the alcohol stopped working, after I would be physically drunk and my mind wouldn't stop talking to me. It would always be telling me I'm not good enough, she doesn't like me, he doesn't like me, I'm not going to be cool, I'm not tall enough, whatever. That stuff wouldn't go away anymore. And then, like, throw on all the consequences that I was racking up, and I couldn't calm my head down. And that's all I wanted. That's all I wanted. And I'd never found anything to get me there except for a drink. So it didn't matter if the drink was working or not. It's the only thing I knew that ever had worked before, and I was willing to go to any lengths to protect that, whether it meant stealing, whether it meant lying. I mean, at one point, like, my best thinking was to write down every lie I'd ever told anybody, like, in real time. Like, I would lie and then pick up this little notebook and go, I told James that I was there. And then, but that didn't, I mean, you can't talk to people and write down your dialogue, so. That was just like what my thinking was coming to. I was running out of ideas, and I thought of everything I could think of to stay sober, on my own wasn't working, and everything I could think of to get loaded without any consequences and without feeling terrible, and waking up like hating myself, I couldn't figure out. And so, like, I didn't have to come to Alcoholics Anonymous to know that this disease was progressive, and then that I on my own I couldn't drink normally, because I knew. I mean, I had tried. When I got here, I thank God that when I got here, I had no game left, and I knew it. Like, I had no ideas about how to do this thing. And so when people were like, you should do this, you should work the steps, you should do 90-90, I was just like, okay. At the end of the doctor's opinion, it says, although you may come to scoff, you may remain to pray. And that's been my experience. Like, I came to scoff. I didn't believe that anything was going to work. I was positive that the steps were not going to work for me, and I was positive that I really was not about God. And you all, Alcoholics Anonymous people, were incredibly uninteresting and really lame. And so I didn't really want anything to do with you people either. But I had nowhere else to go. Like, I was back on probation. I had been expelled. I got sent to this rehab school where basically it's everyone in my county who's like the biggest drug addicts and alcoholics. They put them in a room, and like on probation, they put them in a room, and then we talk about feelings, and then hopefully we all get sober. And so almost no one there is sober. There's people getting put back in juvenile hall and getting sent away to treatment all the time from there. But there was a couple dudes that were serious, that were like real serious about working the steps. And they were about 15, 16. And I'd never met anybody around my age who was sober. Except, yeah, anyway. And there's something real attractive about them. So that these two dudes were, they were happy. You know, and they looked like me, and they looked like they'd been through some crazy shit. And they held themselves with self-esteem, and I hadn't seen that for a long time, you know. And I remember looking in the mirror and seeing my skin was gray, my eyes were kind of turning yellow a little bit, and I just didn't look like myself, and it scared the hell out of me, you know. And so I meet these kids, and they're like on fire, you know. And I my early sobriety, a lot of things happened that I have no understanding of, and now I believe it's because of God, but this one guy asked me on my first day of school there. He came up to me and he asked me if I wanted to stay sober. And I thought, no, leave me alone. But I said yes. And as soon as a yes came out of my mouth, I had no idea why I said it. And I was really irritated that I had spoken to him. But so then he went off like, oh, you should go to meetings. There happened to be a meeting down the street, like two blocks from my house that night. And he told me to go. So I went. And I went because I had nothing better to do. No one wants like call me, no one wants to hang out with me. I didn't have anything to do or anywhere to be, so I went. And I sat in front of this church and I chain smoked, bummed cigarettes. I didn't shake anybody's hand, but I would see them, other people shaking other people's hands. And when they wouldn't want to shake my hand, I'd be incredibly irritated. And then the meeting started, I went inside, I sat in the back against the wall. I didn't say anything to anybody, and I left about 20 minutes in. And that was a Thursday night. That was my sobriety date's November 14th, 2004. And that was the Thursday right after that. And I went to school the next day, and the other guy who was sober talked to me. And he asked me again if I wanted to stay sober, and I thought, no, leave me alone, and I said yes. And then he told me to meet him at Starbucks before this meeting. So I went to this place, and he showed me this list. And he asked me if I'd ever seen it. And I was going to say, yeah, I got one at home or whatever. But I said no. He said, this is a meeting schedule. I want you to get phone numbers and put them on the back of this. And I did that. And I went to the meeting, and I did that. And I didn't. And he also said, which terrified me, he also said, do you have a sponsor? And I was like, of course not. And he was like, well, it's not too hard. It's just like asking a girl out. And I'm like, I was 16 when I got sober, and asking girls out was absolutely terrifying to me. So that didn't make anything any easier, but Alcoholics Anonymous made it a lot easier because the people were approaching me and trying to help me, whatever. So I went to that meeting. I got these people's numbers, and I went out to coffee the next night. Thank you. And I went out to coffee that night, and it was in Applebee's, and this guy, I bought a big book that night, which also irritated me later on because most people get big books for free when they're new, but I had to pay for mine, and so it was really, it frustrated me. But this guy asked me if I have a big book, so I show him my big book. And he's like, I want you to read it to this page and call me every day and tell me what page you're on. And he opened it up to page 164. And that, like, lots of things irritated me when I was new. And that especially did, because I didn't ask this guy to sponsor me. I didn't ask for his help, but he started giving me homework immediately. And I'm not a reader. So, but I did. I don't know why. I don't know. I mean, if I was going to predict my actions based on my previous actions, there's no reason I would have ever done what he told me. There's no reason I ever would have called him or read that book or go to meetings or, like, show up when people told me to show up. But for some reason...